From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Wells Fargo has agreed to pay California nearly $149 million. The money comes as part of a larger $575 million settlement over misconduct at the bank, including revelations that it opened millions of fake accounts without telling customers. We'll discuss the settlement, what it means for the San Francisco-based bank, and for consumers. Then, at 9:30, report cards used to be an end-of-the-semester ritual. These days, hundreds of California schools are using online portals which offer real-time access to grades. While some parents welcome the transparency, others say it is stressing out their kids. We'll discuss that and more next, after this. Welcome to this morning's Forum program. I'm Michael Krasny. San Francisco-based Wells Fargo has agreed to pay $575 million to resolve multiple investigations into misconduct at the bank. That includes inquiries stemming from the 2016 revelation that bank employees were opening accounts for customers without their knowledge, and revelations that Wells Fargo forced thousands of auto loan customers to buy insurance they didn't need. The agreement, reached at the end of 2018, awards money to all 50 states and the District of Columbia, while California is receiving nearly $149 million. I think that's the top of all the states. And joining us to talk about the settlement, Emily Glazer. She's a banking reporter for The Wall Street Journal based in L.A., and good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have Richard Holliber, who's here in studio with us, Executive Director of Consumer Federation of California. Welcome, Richard Holliber.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Wells Fargo declined our invitation. They did send us a statement, which we'll read in the course of this segment. But let me begin, Emily Glazer, with you. And let's begin by talking about what this settlement really points out to us or highlights. It goes back, for the most part, 2 years ago, and I mentioned some of the things, but there's a lot more. Tell us.
Absolutely. So this is a settlement with all 50 states and the District of Columbia. In aggregate, it's about $575 million, and it focuses on the Attorney General's offices for all of those states and D.C. And this settles claims not just about Wells Fargo's fake account scandal. That's when employees were opening sham accounts, ranging from checking and savings accounts to credit cards and debit cards, but also improper charges for auto loan customers and mortgage customers that have come out since the scandal broke in 2016. And the behavior from employees at Wells Fargo actually goes all the way back, some of which all the way even back to 2002. So it's quite broad and has been in some ways a long time coming.
As California Attorney General Javier Becerra said, it's can be characterized correctly as disgraceful behavior. We're also talking about really a 500,000 people who were enrolled in bill-paying service that they didn't ask to join, and overcharging of some mortgage customers. I mean, there's just a whole slew of things, a whole catalog of things. But I want to get to the heart of this, though, in terms of what it's really going to mean. And Richard Holliber, let me go to you on this, because in many ways, from your perspective, it's kind of chump change.
Well, it is. When you consider the exposure here, under the California statute that this settled under, the exposure is $2,500 per instance of fraud or misbehavior. So on a national basis, they were exposed to about $12.5 billion of potential penalties, and they settled for about 4 cents on the dollar. I say that is chump change.
Yeah, and that's also something you described or characterized as a criminal enterprise pretending to be a bank.
You just have to look at the extent and duration and intention behind this. This is goes back to the year 2002. Revelations are still coming out even last year about various practices the company has not come forward with until they were forced to. And it appears to be pervasive from the very top. This practice of cheating customers, creating fake accounts in their names, and engaging in identity theft, as well as some of the other practices. I don't know how else you describe it except as a criminal enterprise.
And Emily Glazer, we saw a number of firings of executives, kind of a changing of the guard in many respects. There have been restrictions set up by the Federal Reserve, and supposedly Wells Fargo is saying, and they're doing a lot of advertising on this and a lot of marketing, we've got our act together now. What can you tell us about that?
They have said that they are reestablished. That was the big ad for 2018. As our reporting shows, you know, and as you guys just mentioned, there have been new problems that have popped up that occurred in 2017 and 2018, ranging from altering customer information on different sensitive documents, and some problems both with the foreign exchange business that's still under investigation, and a slew of problems with its wealth management business, which is also under investigation. So the bank has made executive changes. However, I think it's important to note that some of it have come about from regulatory recommendation and pushing. Recently, just in late October, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, which is actually one of the main banking regulators, sent regulatory warning letters. They're known as 15-day letters because you have 15 days to respond, even though extensions are fairly common, to the Chief Administrative Officer, Hope Hardison, and the Chief Auditor of the bank, David Julian. The bank immediately put both of them on leaves of absence, and we have not seen what the result of those letters are yet, but what we reported a couple weeks ago is that it's common for there to be an individual civil fine and or a temporary or permanent ban in the industry. Those are two people out of roughly a dozen on the bank's operating committee of top executives. They've also changed their general counsel, and then they've kind of reshuffled a number of top executives into new roles, new head of retail banking, new head of consumer lending, et cetera. So some of the changes they've done on their own, but some have certainly been a result of regulators continuing to ask the bank to make these changes.
Again, Emily Glazer is a banking reporter with The Wall Street Journal. I want to go back, though, to Richard Holliber, who's here with us in studio, who's executive director of the Consumer Federation of California. Their new CEO, not so new now, but the replaced CEO, Tim Sloan, has said that the settlement policy essentially says that they are working to make things right. They're a better bank, I think was his phrasing, and they're trying to get back their reputation. When we've just heard from Emily Glazer, where does this stand?
Well, first, their reputation is in tatters. You know, they went from being the seventh most respected corporation in America to absolute zero in the top 100. They're now ranked 100 behind such wonderful companies as Philip Morris and RJR, Reynolds Tobacco. So that's a pretty bad outcome. And even last month, the Federal Reserve refused to lift caps on their growth because they said they're not complying with their own agreement to better police themselves. So I don't think their reputation is getting any better. I think it's getting worse.
They are trying to change their image. And in fact, let me read a statement that the Wells Fargo spokesperson emailed to us earlier today. I'm quoting, "There are no new issues raised in the agreement, and all have been previously disclosed and extensively covered, going back more than 2 years in some cases. In addition, we have been working with our federal regulators and actively providing remediation to customers impacted by the covered issues." Richard?
Well, it's true that this settlement does cover only several items that have been revealed in the past, and Emily discussed them, and there are several others she mentioned that are newer that are not covered. I would love to see our state attorney general enforce identity theft laws that are criminal laws against Wells Fargo. I mean, this is wholesale identity theft on an organized basis. Also, what's absent in this settlement I find very troubling is the use of forced mandatory arbitration to deprive consumers of having their day in court when they're defrauded by their bank. Now, we sponsored legislation. It became law this year. If there's a future Wells Fargo that engages in identity theft, you will be able to have your day in court and sue that bank. And that should have been part of this agreement, that this company's behavior is so bad. When someone is a victim, they should not be forced into a private system of justice called mandatory arbitration that is one-sided in favor of Wells Fargo.
And Emily Glazer, Wells Fargo has made this settlement with 50 states and D.C., but doesn't the judge have to approve the settlement before it's finalized still?
You know, in certain states, the judge still has to approve the settlement, although, you know, a spokesman for the bank had said to me that on Wells Fargo's end, it's all clear. So I think that is something that's state by state. And just to follow up on something that Richard mentioned in terms of forced arbitration, absolutely, that was a huge issue. We spoke to a number of consumers, especially toward, you know, the tail end of 2016, early 2017, when the retail banking sales practices problems had emerged. And it was a huge problem with consumers who, you know, may not have a full understanding of banking practices. They may not be as sophisticated. I think what we have to remember here is the initial problem that kind of exposed everything at Wells Fargo is a Main Street problem that most people can understand. That's what made it such a different banking scandal. It's not something, you know, complicated with derivatives or different hedged bets that, you know, the average Joe wouldn't understand. This is something that a lot of people grasp.
And a lot of people understand being forced by your boss to do things and being fearful of losing your job. I mean,
absolutely.
That was kind of at the heart of it, yeah.
Sure thing. Or all of a sudden going to your branch and finding out you had 15 checking accounts opened under your name without your knowledge and a couple of credit cards. So, you know, I think the forced arbitration point is a very good one. We've also heard from a lot of consumers since writing this article and breaking news about the settlement on Friday who are asking, what part of this money is going to me as a customer if I was wronged? And that has been a big black hole so far with this settlement and something that a lot of us just don't know yet.
Well, I think, Richard, your group figured out it's about $100 per customer, maybe?
Well, it's the equivalent of about, you know, $100 per customer. However, if you read the settlement, that money will go to the State of California General Fund. And because the case was filed in Los Angeles County, 50% goes to the Los Angeles County General Fund to be used for consumer enforcement purposes. There's no money, from what we've read, that goes back to any consumer's pocket in California.
It's time for me to ask listeners to weigh in here. We'd like to hear from you on this. We'd like to hear from you and know about your experience with Wells Fargo, your thoughts about or feelings about the settlement, and what changes would you like to see at the bank? You can give us a call now, and let me invite you to do that. The toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. That number again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have or comments to forum@kqed.org. And we're talking again with Emily Glazer, banking reporter for The Wall Street Journal, and Richard Holober, who is Executive Director of Consumer Federation of California. Again, Wells Fargo was invited but declined to be with us. A tweet from Logan who says, these fines are never punitive enough. Wells Fargo is fined $500 million, but how much did they make off these scams? There are U.S. citizens who were put in jail for years for possessing small amounts of marijuana. Executives need to be thrown in jail. Richard Holober, you're smiling.
It would be a good thing if the laws allowed us to throw these executives in jail. The problem in the United States is corporations can't be thrown in jail.
It's too bad. They're individuals, aren't they? Individuals are thrown in jail.
Well, that's right. You know, on the one hand, corporations have the rights of a person, but when it comes to jail time, they don't have the jeopardy of going to jail or their executives. And, you know, Wells Fargo's profits over the past 12 months are in excess of $20 billion. So this settlement is a fraction of the amount of profit they got from the Trump tax reform, so-called tax reform, tax giveaway to big business. They can easily afford to absorb this with no pain.
We're getting a lot of these kind of comments, you know, send the crooks to jail and that sort of thing. But let's go back a little bit here just in terms of, well, background, I suppose is the right word, Emily Glazer, because a lot of this was done really to inflate stock prices, and that was to the benefit of the top executives. But they also parlayed a good deal of money from benefits that were for shareholders.
Yes, this is something generally the practices here are known as cross-selling, and Wells Fargo had a lot of goals and included it on investor presentations, you know, even something like 8 is great, you know, hoping they could have 8 products per household, per customer. That was something they included on investor presentations, and it's something the Securities and Exchange Commission is investigating. Let's also not forget the Department of Justice is also still investigating a number of problems that have popped up at Wells Fargo over the last 2 years or so, including retail banking sales practices, issues with foreign exchange, its foreign exchange business that largely serves commercial and investment banking customers, and I briefly mentioned earlier, inappropriate referrals across its wealth management business. So in terms of whether anyone's going to jail, the criminal investigation by the Justice Department is still underway. We have no idea what it will come to, but just important to note, that is the criminal investigation.
That's still ongoing, but you wonder what kind of deterrence is built into this sort of response, if any. I mean, not only for banking executives, but particularly or specifically maybe even for Wells Fargo. But let's hear what our listeners have to say or ask. And we begin, Justin, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. If I walked into a retail store and stole something off the rack, I would go to jail for it. And looking at the big picture, what Wells Fargo did was ethically and morally far worse than something like that. So why is incarceration not even a question or even a question in this situation? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
All right. I thank you for the comment. Richard, you want to respond to it?
Well, I think the problem is with our American system of justice. They give corporations immunity from being put in jail and their executives from being put in jail when they engage in criminal activities. And again, I do think that in California, there should be a criminal investigation of identity theft and jail time resulting from that.
Well, what about John Stumpf in the wake of this scandal? He was former CEO, now replaced by Timothy Sloan. Did he receive a golden parachute?
Well, I think it was in excess of $100 million, yeah, if I recall. So did several other executives. And, you know, the new CEO is a 30-year Wells Fargo veteran, so they have not cleaned house. This bank should be broken up. It's no longer serving the interests of the public.
Too big to fail. Yeah. Go ahead, Emily Glazer.
I'd love to just pop in there. And I think, you know, Richard, you made a lot of great points. One thing just to mention is that there have been a number of so-called consent orders. These are enforcement actions by the regulators. And one of the ones by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, known as the OCC, is that a number of the bank's operating committee members, going back to around 2015, their golden parachutes are under review, so they actually can't get paid out until these investigations are wrapped up. The actual process is a little shady. I don't know exactly, or murky, I should say. I, as a reporter, don't know exactly what's going on. That's something the OCC is in discussion with the bank and current and former executives. So a lot of them have just been able to retire, and our understanding is that they have not been paid out yet. That's also different than getting fired and having everything stripped away.
So, well, Emily, you mentioned the DOJ investigation. There's also an investigation,
yes,
by Security Exchange, I believe, isn't there, for wealth management and foreign exchange business?
Yes, and ongoing investigations by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, the Department of Labor. I mean, if you think of most of the regulators that oversee the banking industry, Wells Fargo is probably under investigation or has been by every single one of them, if not multiple times. John Stumpf is still part of a lot of these investigations, even though he has not been chairman or CEO of the bank since late 2016. As are the current CEO, Timothy Sloan, a number of people on the operating committee, and a number of other executives who've just retired, not been fired, and are no longer with the bank. So I think there's a ton of questions remaining about what will happen to those people.
And they're also trying to change their image, as we said earlier. I just want to mention they're specifically gearing a lot of this toward millennials. They've got new cards available and merit points and all that sort of thing. Many things going on, more mobile banking apps. This is almost specifically geared toward millennials, and they're showing some growth. But let me get some more calls on here, and we go to you, Lahitha. Good morning.
Hi, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to bring up to your listeners the possibility of going to not-for-profit banks like credit unions. Most people sort of grew up with the language of a corporate bank, so it's the only language they speak, and it's the system they expect to operate under. But it's a one-day process. You go into a corporate bank, you close your accounts, you go to a credit union, you open a new account, there's lower fees, better rates on loans, all of these things that I feel like a lot of people just aren't well educated on.
I think it's a worthy point. Your thoughts, Richard Holliber?
I agree completely. Credit unions are not for profit. They tend to be more local and more community-based, and their fees are lower, and they treat customers better. So I would say Wells Fargo and the other giant banks, people should exit those banks and go to credit unions.
And thank you, Lalitha, for that call. Are they, Emily, just want another fact in the mix here, and they have to give up their license, their insurance license for a couple of years as part of the settlement?
Yeah, so this is actually a different settlement. Like I mentioned before, there are a ton of different regulators and a lot of folks examining Wells Fargo for different reasons. So just ironically, with timing, yesterday, California Department of Insurance, the CPRB, actually put out a news release of a settlement that they had in a different Wells Fargo case for a $10 million penalty. And as part of that, Wells Fargo agreed to exit its personal insurance business, and there was an investigation from quite some time ago, more than a year, that found it had signed up 1,500 consumers for insurance without their consent. That's specific to the state of California. So this is just another different investigation about improper practices specifically related to insurance products, and Wells Fargo has actually exited or sold a number of its insurance businesses in the past 2 years or so as part of a big sweep of divestitures that the bank has been doing to focus on its so-called core businesses and also, it brings more revenue to the bank in a time when some of its businesses are struggling. So they have been on a bit of a selling spree.
Talking about Wells Fargo resolving investigations with a $575 million settlement. Let me go to another caller, and that's you, Chad. Thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Hey, great. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is, I refinanced my mortgage with Wells Fargo a few years ago. I recall I had to pay some fees that I wasn't expecting kind of at the last minute. And what's the best way for me to understand if I was a victim of some of these practices that we're hearing about, and just to understand, what my rights are and what the best course of action would be.
Where should he go, Richard Holliver?
Well, there are two things I suggest. If this was covered by the settlement, and this was where people got what was called mortgage interest rate protection to make sure that when they refinanced or financed that if rates went up, they would not be charged a higher rate. But Wells Fargo intentionally allowed those protection periods to expire, and about 110,000 victims were charged. So you could either contact the state attorney general under the settlement or go to the Wells Fargo website. They're supposed to be very consumer-friendly right now and help you with that. Michael, could I just add one point on this settlement yesterday? Because I think it's a contrast. The State Department of Insurance under Commissioner Dave Jones penalized Wells Fargo $6,666 per victim. The 50-state settlement is for California about $100 per victim. So, and they also had to give up their license to sell insurance for 2 years. That's a very, very tough penalty, the kind of thing we would like to see happen elsewhere in California and throughout the nation.
And I have a final question from a listener named Peter. I'm going to go to you on this, Emily Glazer. He says, where's the class action suit? I think the company needs to lose a major consumer lawsuit for it to change its way. There is a class action suit in the works, isn't there, Emily?
Indeed. Yes. So there was a class action suit specifically related to the retail banking scandal. That was already settled for about $142 million several months ago. There is another shareholder securities suit. And that has to do a lot with the misrepresentation of what the bank was doing, and that's related to shareholders. There's a preliminary settlement that has been approved by a judge, I believe, and that's for $480 million. Now, there are also some outstanding class action suits I've been hearing about relating to the other practices, since as we've been talking about, there's so many different issues and problems that have popped up at the bank related to its mortgage practices, auto lending, wealth management. So I would say that we should stay tuned and see if there are other class action suits.
Yeah, definitely stay tuned. We've got another segment of Forum up ahead, but I'm glad to have had both of you, Emily Glazer of the Wall Street Journal, Richard Holliver of the Consumer Federation of California. We will continue to follow this story. Stay tuned. We're going to go to another when we return. I'm Michael Krasny.
Hey, everybody. I'm Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. Together, we're the host of Political Breakdown, a weekly podcast that looks at politics through a distinctly California lens.
You can join us each week. We're going to get up close and personal with some of the biggest movers and shakers, elected officials and others working in politics today.
Search for Political Breakdown wherever you get your podcasts.